Hey, everybody, Sarah Grillo here. Welcome back to the Sarah Grillo podcast. Today, I am honored to have Aaron Klein, the CEO of Riskalyze, with us. Da-da-da-da!
Great to be with you, Sarah.
Hey, Aaron, welcome to the show. And Aaron, for those of you who do not know him, is the founder and CEO at Riskalyze. He's led the company to twice being named one of the world's top 10 most innovative companies in finance by Fast Company magazine. And today there are over 200 Riskalyzers, and they serve advisors who've aligned the world's investments with millions of investors' risk numbers. And aside from that, Aaron is a very engaging speaker, and we've got some wonderful content prepared. So here's the reason I wanted to have Aaron on the show. Well, there are many reasons, but the biggest one is that from the advisor's point of view, in my work every day with advisors, I hear this over and over again, that risk is really the thorn in your side when it comes to serving your clients. Mm. It seems to me like there is no bigger reason when I interview an advisor, when I first start working with him or her, that an advisor loses a client or is not in good standing with a client. It comes up over and over again. Tension, the client leaves. Yep. And it's because even the people with 20 plus 30 years in the business are struggling with this. And it's very difficult, I'm seeing. So I wanted to have Aaron here to talk about a better way, really, to discuss risk with your clients. And it'll hopefully make it so that the advisor and the client don't have these tensions, because what inevitably happens is the advisor thinks they're right. The client feels like, well, you know, I mean, the advisor doesn't want to get sued, right? That's the biggest thing, is the liability. On the other side, the client wants to maximize the value of what they're paying for. If they're paying, in many cases, 10 grand to be served by the advisor, they want the planning and the tax advice. But at the end of the day, if you're managing their investments, they want you to do better than what they could do. And so how do we align these two, what seems to be at odds with each other, confusing and troublesome issues that advisors are having with risk from their practice management standpoint? And so great to see Aaron here today. I'm honored to have one of the industry's best to talk about it with us. Let's get cracking. So Aaron.
I appreciate that.
Cool. So Aaron believes there's a few reasons why investing feels broken to the average investor. Aaron, take it away.
Yeah, for sure. And I love what you said there. I think that a lot of financial advisors, you know, got into the business with this idea that they were going to be money managers. And little did they, you know, like come to find out, a financial advisor is really a behavioral psychology manager, right? Like they spend most of their time trying to help clients make the kinds of short-term decisions that can help support their long-term financial goals. So, you know, managing money is something that that financial advisors obviously do, but it becomes quite secondary to making sure that the clients don't blow up your great money management plan along the way. And so it's really interesting. And I think for a lot of financial advisors, it's eye-opening, and it's a problem and an issue that they didn't expect to be dealing with. But it's the reality of being a financial advisor in today's world. And, you know, we started the company, you know, as you said, from the standpoint of saying, you know, investing really feels broken to the average individual. It feels like this black box. They don't understand, you know, like how to get a predictable result out of it, or how to understand the results that they do get out of it. And I think that, you know, I remember back to, you know, before starting the company, I was running global product for a division of an options brokerage firm. And we're building these technology tools to help options traders understand risk. And this buddy of mine, Mike McDaniel, is a financial advisor. And I said to him at some point, I said, you know, it is crazy how the average investor thinks about the concept of risk. And he said to me, if you think that's crazy, you should see how many of us financial advisors think about it. You know, we just do not have and the capabilities in our industry to really understand how much risk the client can handle and make sure that we're aligning our long-term plan for the client to fit that. Because if you don't, then the client's just going to blow up the long-term plan along the way. And that actually does far more harm, than anything else. We can sit here and argue about high fees in the industry. We can sit here and argue about all different kinds of issues that exist in the industry. But frankly, clients lose the most money from blowing up their own financial plan with bad decisions. And so, you know, we started thinking about this idea and working on this idea, and it's been, you know, a mission that we've been on now for 7 years. And at the end of the day, I think you can boil it down to this. I think that there's been kind of three waves of how advice gets delivered. The first wave was kind of, it was kind of known for promising great returns, right? So you can go back to the stockbroker who was picking stocks, or the guy who says, you know, we've got the best research team, we've got the best, you know, the access to secret investments that nobody else has access to, you know, whatever they're going to say. But it's kind of the my mutual fund is better than the other guy's mutual fund. That's the message. And this phase of financial advice, that first wave, is typically documented in, you know, very bad 1980s movies, right? Documenting the period like Wolf of Wall Street or things like that. Like none of them are any good. But that wave kind of gave way to what I call the second wave, which is now we're going to think about long-term goals-based planning, right? So whenever you actually talk about short-term returns, I'm going to try to deflect the question. I'm going to say, you know, you shouldn't even be thinking about your short-term returns. We're just going to take the amount of money you have right now, run it through the long-term plan, and see that you're going to be okay in 30 years. And whenever you ask me about short-term returns, I'm going to say, hey, try not to open your mail. Try not to watch television. Just be a long-term investor. And, you know, there's a lot of, like, there are some nuggets of truth to that advice, right? Like, I think it was Fidelity who did a study not long ago on, like, you know, are there any factors that correlate with some of our most successful self-directed investors, right? And they found a couple of factors that if you had one of these factors, you were very likely to be like in the top 5% of performers in their self-directed brokerage accounts, okay? And the three factors were that you had forgotten your password, you had died, or you'd completely forgotten that you even had an account at Fidelity. Like, if you had one of those factors, you were likely to be a very high performing, you know, self-directed brokerage account at Fidelity. It's hysterical. And so at the, you know, the nugget of truth that's there is that humans have this bad tendency to sabotage their own investing. So we look at that and say, yeah, the advice to, like, try not to watch television, try not to open your mail, there's a few nuggets of truth there. The only problem with that advice is that humans are incapable of following it. So we believe that the third wave of advice is to understand who our clients are and how much risk they can handle. And to, we call it the risk number, right? And then to align their portfolio to fit who that client is. And ultimately what we're doing is we're building a short-term framework to understand and react to risk appropriately. Because if we can do that, we can take a fear-bound investor who makes bad short-term decisions, and we can transform them into a fearless investor who makes really great short-term decisions. And great short-term decisions are the input that financial advisors turn into fantastic long-term financial goals, and achieving those long-term financial goals. So that's kind of how we saw the world and how we decided to start a company that would equip financial advisors with the way to turn those fear-bound investors into fearless investors.
So let's go back, if we could, to the part about risk being broken.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to me about why investors get confused about risk in the first place.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think that, you know, our psychology tends to work against us. I kind of like how Warren Buffett said it, like investments are literally the only thing that we refuse to buy when they're at their cheapest, and we only want to buy when they're at their most expensive. And I think, you know, it's just basic psychology. When we see the market as green and going up, we feel optimistic and excited. We want to put more money to work. We want to take more risk. We want to see more growth. And then ultimately, when you go through a period like we've just gone through where, you know, the screen is red every day and we're seeing, you know, a lot of losses in our account, we're seeing a lot of volatility in the markets, we start getting fearful. We start, you know, making emotion-driven decisions and fear-bound decisions to take money out of the markets or to pull money back or to take less risk. And ultimately, you know, what we're doing is we're doing exactly what Warren Buffett just talked about. We're refusing to buy when things are at their cheapest, and we only want to buy when they're at their most expensive. And so, you know, if we, what's interesting about that is that we're falling prey to a number of well-known behavioral finance issues. And part of that is, from my perspective, a big part of what Riskalyze has done is really helped to flip what we call confirmation bias to work for us. Confirmation bias, you know, is where we have a tendency to interpret new data points as confirmation of what we've already decided or already believed to be true, right? So all of us as humans have this tendency. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen is that if we can actually help the client to fully understand the risk that they're taking, if we can help them understand, hey, my portfolio is a risk 45, and over the next 6 months, it would be totally normal for this portfolio to be down 8% all the way up to up 12%. It could be anywhere within that range. That would be normal behavior for this portfolio. When I look at that and I look at that in real dollar amounts that are relevant to me, I'm able to say, okay, that's a good risk that I'm willing to take. And then 6 months from now, when the market is down, I can look at that and confirmation bias can actually work for me because I can say, you know what? I made a decision 6 months ago. It was the right decision. This is normal behavior for my portfolio. And I do not need to make a fear-bound decision that could potentially blow up my long-term financial plan.
Right. Well, it's really all about the expectations. Right.
I think that's true. I think that when, you know, you talked earlier about, you know, advisors and kind of the interesting relationship dynamics that they have with clients, right? Because on the one hand, the advisor need, you know, the client can leave at any point in time. So the advisor needs to maintain a good relationship with the client while they're serving them. But on the other hand, sometimes the decisions that the advisor needs to make can make the client feel a little bit uncomfortable along the way, right? And if you make bad decisions for the client now just for the sake of making them happy, well, I'll tell you what, that client's not going to be very happy with you a little bit down the road when very clearly they're not on track to meet their long-term financial goals. So ultimately, what we see great advisors doing is you know, being very clear, creating a ton of clarity with their clients about what to expect, about what is normal behavior for a portfolio, and create alignment with that so that when we get into times like the last couple of months, clients are not freaking out going, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Clients are looking at this and going, saying, okay, I've been able to see how my portfolio has behaved normally to the upside for the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. Now I'm watching it go down, but I can see how it's still behaving normally for the amount of risk that I chose to take. And so, you know, by having those expectations preset and for the advisor being able to like take the client back to that and say, remember, this is what we said was going to be normal for this portfolio, that gives the client permission to realize that they made the right decision many months ago. And the right call is to stick with the decision they made.
Yeah, because It's the typical advisor kind of line when you're setting up a portfolio for somebody and the person wants to know the return expectations. You say something like, oh, well, this portfolio typically averages 10% return year over year.
Yep. Now,
people don't hear the word average.
That's right. Not at all.
They hear that they hear 10%.
That's right.
And, so and that's just, it's messed up.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting one because, you know, in markets like we've had over the last few years where the markets continue to climb, right? Yeah, we've had this period of volatility for the last quarter or so. But really, I mean, we're kind of in the middle of like a 10-year bull market. I say in the middle. We have no idea where we are at in the process of that bear market, but we're at about a 10-year bear market or bull market so far. And at the end of the day, like it is a really challenging thing for advisors when the market is going straight up, because what happens is exactly what you just said. I like to say, I think that if you could be a fly on a wall in a typical meeting that an advisor might have with a prospective client, right? Like they're trying to bring the client aboard. I think there's a conversation that goes something like this. The client says, or the prospective client says, what can I expect out of this portfolio? And the advisor says, well, you know, this is the kind of portfolio that for somebody of your age and time horizon and the time you have until retirement and, you know, and your income level, like this is the kind of portfolio that I believe can get you to a successful retirement outcome. And, you know, the prospective client kind of says, well, duh, like I'm assuming you wouldn't recommend a portfolio that you didn't think would get me to that. What I'm trying to say is like a year from now, where do you think we'll be? And, you know, the advisor will typically say, well, wait a minute, like I'm not a shaman. I have no crystal ball. I have no way to know what the market's going to do, you know, a year from now. So I really can't just tell you where your portfolio is going to be a year from now. And if anybody tries to tell you that they can, like I would run screaming from the room. And you know, that's a pretty fair statement on the part of the advisor. But the prospective client typically has the trump card because they say something like, well, look, like I'm not going to just sit around for 30 years and hope that you're right. You've got to give me some way of judging like whether we're on track or not, or how we're doing, say a year from now. And it's the advisor who usually capitulates that point and says exactly the point that you just said, which is, well, look, with this kind of portfolio, like over the long run, we should probably average 10% a year. And like you just said, I mean, that's exactly right. The client does not hear over the long run or average or anything. All they heard was 10% a year. And the problem is that the advisor is guaranteed to lose in that conversation like 95% of the time. Like if there is one number that the market almost never hits, it is its own average.
Right.
Right? You can go back like 25 years. Almost
hit it once.
Yeah, almost any 25-year period and you might find one. You might. I found plenty of 25-year periods where you can't even find one, okay? Where it got to within 1% of its own average. So the reality is that either the client is coming in and they're pissed off because they didn't make 10%, even though, you know, you on a risk-adjusted basis, you did really well. Or conversely, that same client is coming in and saying, well, dude, the market's up 20%. Why did we only make 15? And so that's a really interesting conversation for an advisor to manage. I call that the question, by the way, the why is the market beating my portfolio? That's the question that has put more financial advisors into mental institutions than any other question, right? It like drives them nuts. And I you know, we literally built a whole screen in RiskLize, a whole feature that we call stress test, just to help advisors answer that question, where they can pop open and say, okay, look, your portfolio is a 45, okay? The market that you're comparing to is a risk 78. Now, let's take a look here at the stress test for like 2013 when the markets were going straight up. Like a 45 is never going to beat a 78 when the markets are up, like never in a million years. But let's take a look at, say, 2008. Like I think this is why you wanted to be a risk 45 instead of being a risk 78. And of course, the client at that point is like, yeah, I can see what you're talking about. Like, that's a lot of red. That's a lot of loss. And the advisor can say, like, look, I can give you a 78 if that's what you want. In fact, I can give you a way better 78 than a market index fund. But you told me you wanted to be a 45. So, you know, getting clients to understand expectations are key, like you said, and getting a client to understand and be able to visualize and see the trade-offs between risk and reward, that is really key to building those kinds of long-term client relationships that can stand the test of time and stand the test of expectations.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's giving another dimension to the discussion rather than just throwing a number out there.
Right.
They're gonna think it means something, and that it may or may not come true. Now, here's the other thing, the stereotypes, right? The task of having to classify someone that when you start out working with them, you're an advisor, you get a new client, you don't know this person.
Yep.
You really don't. And so how do you actually figure out something really important, which is what are they going to like and not like?
Yep.
And that's a very hard
react to risk, right? And so what's interesting is that our industry has typically done that by stereotyping based on age, right? Like, we're all good people and for the most part, and we don't find ourselves stereotyping people on risk very much based on their race. Sometimes we do it based on their gender. Okay, there's a perception, for example, that women are more risk averse than men. It's not borne out by the data, by the way, but there is
I hate that stereotype, by the way.
It's not accurate. It's just not accurate.
But who made it up?
I don't know.
But it's like this whole urban myth, like someone made it up, and then now everyone is like, oh, yeah.
So true. And I think, you know, part of it probably just stems from the idea that women don't handle money, right? That the man is the one who's always handling the money. And boy, I can't tell you how many times, you know, we've heard the story together of financial advisors who, you know, a couple comes in and they spend all their time talking to the man only to find out that the woman is the one who, you know, makes 80% of the income in the relationship, right? So, you know, things have changed in terms of you know, people and how they earn and all of that and how women, you know, manage money. And so, yeah, the stereotype that women are more risk averse than men, we actually were featured in an article in Business Week not long ago, just with a bunch of data about how that is just not true.
Okay, good. Send me that article.
Oh, I will. Maybe. It's a fun article. But you know, what's really interesting is that the number one way that our industry tends to stereotype people is based on age. Okay. So we basically, and part of this, I think, comes from some financial advisors are a bit, for lack of a better term, condescending. Like they want to tell the client how much risk they should take, not listen to the client and understand who they are and how they're going to react to things and like plan around that. They're like, no, I'll tell my clients how much risk to take. And that's how much they should take based on, you know, when they're going to need the money. So they'll basically stereotype based on age. They'll say, look, you're young. You should be aggressive. And that's what, it, you know, that's what the industry's risk tolerance questionnaires, you know, really focus on is about 95% of the weight is age. Like, you're young. You should be aggressive. You've got your whole career ahead of you. If there's some choppiness in the market, you should be aggressive. You're young. And then if you're older, we just think that you should be conservative. And so everything kind of tilts older investors towards more conservative investments. And the problem is that it's, again, the stereotypes just aren't true. I'll give you a really good example. We had a team of academics come in and do a study on our methodology and our data. And when they dove into the data, one of the things they found is that investors aged 20 to 29, about 52% of them didn't fit the stereotype of being aggressive. Okay. Now 52% to 48%, like that's pretty close. But if you think about it this way, like half of them are up there in the aggressive range. That kind of makes sense. They've got their whole career ahead of them. But fully, you know, a little bit over one half of the investors aged 20 to 29 are spread across the rest of the risk spectrum. So it's literally half of the investors who are aged 20 to 29 that our industry is serving incorrectly by automatically putting them into aggressive investments. Conversely, investors aged 70 to 79, 53% of them didn't fit their stereotype of being conservative. right? So about half are conservative, but then the other half are spread across the rest of the investing spectrum. I remember one advisor who was telling me a story. When he first started using Riskalyze, he had a client who was, you know, making all the noises about leaving him. And, you know, so he got a meeting with the client. The client comes in and he says, yeah, George, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go to a different advisor. He says, you know, this is 2013, by the way, so the markets are just, you know, screaming ahead and making great returns. And the client says to him, he says, you know, my son has been doing better than I have. My friends have been doing better than I have. And I just feel like I need to get better returns. And you know, I that's what I think is important. And so, so George said, well, oh man, I feel horrible about this. This is really too bad. He said, hey, I just started using, you know, this new tool to understand how much risk clients want to take. Like, do you mind if we go through this? I'm just really curious. So the guy is like 75 years old. He goes through the process, and the guy who's 75 years old comes out as a risk 72, right? And George is just kind of floored. And he says, you know, I typically investors of your age, I have them all down as like a risk 35, but I've always known that you were more aggressive than the typical investor like you. So I have you invested like a 45, but you're coming out as like a risk 72. And then it just kind of hit George. He said, this client was a state of California employee. He's retired. If there's one thing we know about the state of California is that they will bankrupt that state before they don't pay out the pensions, right? So this guy feels completely secure in his retirement, and his money that he's got invested with George is about whether or not he's going to be able to afford that beach house with his wife. And so he wants to take big risk with that money. And at the end of the day, you know, George was able to show me, says, well, let me show you my typical, you know, risk 70 portfolio. And the client looked at that and he said, for heaven's sakes, George, you can do this for me? He goes, absolutely, I can do this for you. He goes, great, you're hired again. So it's really fascinating what can happen when we stop stereotyping people and we use math to actually get to the core of what they're trying to accomplish and what they can handle.
Right. You know, Aaron, I think we've been talking now for about maybe 40 minutes here. So it looks like we're coming to the end.
Well, all good things must come to an end eventually, right?
That's true. What are the three things that, and you've said so many things that are insightful, and I really thank you for that. And I hope that all the advisors across the world that are going to listen to this podcast are going to be helped by that. And of course, reach out to Aaron or me if you have any questions. But just to summarize it, what are the three things that advisors should be thinking of as they're having these risk conversations?
Yeah, that's a great question. First and foremost, you've got to understand, number one, how much money the client feels like they can afford to lose in dollars, okay? Mm-hmm. Because as I like to say it, 4 out of 3 Americans are bad at math, okay?
Did you make that up?
Well, 72% of all statistics are made up on the fly. So, but you know, what I mean by that is that you can ask somebody with a $1 million portfolio, you know, whether they're comfortable with risking 15% of their portfolio, and they will say, absolutely, as long as my account doesn't dip below $900,000, okay? And so you've really got to use real dollars to understand kind of like where the client's sensitivities are around their money. And it can lead to some great conversations around why. Well, I wouldn't be able to send my kid to Harvard if that happened, you know? And so it really helps you uncover a lot of those kinds of goals. So that's number one, use real dollars to understand how much the client can possibly afford to lose and how to think about managing the portfolio to fit that. Number two, you know, and you and I said it earlier, like it's all about expectations. If you are not helping your client understand in advance what is normal behavior for their portfolio, it's going to be difficult to have their trust when difficult points in the market arrive. And so you've really got to be thinking about that on a regular basis. And number three, I would just throw in that it's really important to understand that when you're doing a client review, you are currently like talking, like the things that you're communicating to your client are really powerful, and you have brought the client up to kind of the highest level that they will be until the time that you talk to them next time. And what I mean by that is that the moment that they leave your office, you know, they glance at their smartphone, they see CNBC on the screen, whatever, you know, the news is not really designed to make us feel good about what's going on. The news is designed to get...
There's too much money to be made for making you feel bad.
Exactly right. So, you know, like we actually built a whole feature around this that we call check-ins, which are just about helping the advisor, you know, like keep their finger on the pulse of the client's psychology between client reviews. So I think it's so critical to understand that the moment they leave your office, they are at the highest level that they're going to be psychologically speaking until the next time they meet with you and you have the chance to build up their confidence in their decisions again. So it's critical to keep your finger on the pulse of how they're feeling and how they're feeling about their decisions in between, because otherwise, you know, you're bound to have a surprise when something bad happens and a client is feeling really nervous.
Right. Okay. So, Aaron, thank you so much again. And we're going to say adios here to everybody. But thanks to our audience for listening. And please subscribe to my show, rate, and review this podcast. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.